Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 15th chapter, verses 1 to 41, whole chapter. Verse 1. Shivar nirvashe alasya charshita paksa prasam apachatika ayushitam sityayu ayatavitayatana. Shukri Prashant continued, O King Bhikshit, from the womb of Urvashi, six sons were generated by Purudava. Their names were Ayu, Shatayu, Sityayu, Raya, Vijaya, and Jaya. Mukam tadati baksham, nangam kati vijaya, mukam tadati baksham, nangam kati vijaya, Om Adhyana, Chandran, Nisya, Gyanam, Chandran, Shukautayam, So what do you remember from chapter 11, Ram Lila? Adipush?
One who hears it becomes free from aggression and envy.
Wonderful. One who hears Ram Lila becomes free from aggression and envy.
Aggression
and envy. Free from aggression. Each one of these lilas has a special shruti phala, or something that happens after you hear it. We don't have one for today's lila, Parashuram, I don't think. Do we, Adipurush? But certainly, our anartas will be reduced. Whenever the Lord kills demons, then it reduces the demons in our heart. The demons in our heart are also killed. So by hearing this lila today of Parashuram killing everybody, then our anartas will also be killed in our hearts. In preparation for hearing the 10th canto next year and hearing about Lord Krishna in the form of a cowherd boy. So now in today's class we will see Krishna in a very angry form. Almost, actually there's two angry forms, Srinidev and Parashuram. And so when Krishna is angry, then he takes these forms. But Parashuram, he will be pacified at the end, and he will give up his anger. So what about chapter 12? Yes?
The items that constitute the ideal kingdom of Ramaraja.
I think that's chapter 11, Ramaraja. To chapter 12 also.
Affectionate
relationship around the Lord.
And citizens and
if you follow Varnashram, then Lord in the center, affectionate relationship between the king and citizens, and Varnashram Dharma. Okay? Anything else about chapter 12? Yes, Abhay.
Dynasty of Kusha,
chapter 12. And there's one person in that dynasty that is still living today.
Maru.
Yes. He is the descendant of Ikshaku, and he will, at the end of Kali Yuga, when Sati Yuga comes, he will reestablish the Surya dynasty. And we'll also hear about Devapi, who is in the Soma dynasty, brother Shantanu. He will reestablish, he is still living in a very famous village, what is it? Kalapagram. They're still living up there in the Himalayas somewhere. And when Kali Yuga is finished, then Devapi and Maru will reestablish the Soma and Surya Vamsa dynasties. So they are living thousands and thousands of years, or maybe even millions of years, for all we know. This happened a few million years ago. So they will get instruction directly from the Lord. They will return to human society and reestablish Varnashram as it was before, for Satyuga. Okay, chapter 13. What's the title of chapter 13? Chapter 13 is the dynasty of Maharaj Nimi. Who is Maharaj Nimi?
Son of Ikshaku.
Son of Ikshvaku, okay? And what is he famous for?
Well, he got his spiritual body.
He got a spiritual body, okay? He got spiritual liberation.
And they turned his body, and from that body they got Janaka. Not the second.
Not the second, okay. First Janaka. And then, chapter 14 is Pururava and Urvashi. So, chapter 15, we hear the result of Pururava and Urvashi, 6 sons. And we just said their names. You can see here there's a chart, and you also have this chart in your notes. Flip chart, which goes from chapter 14 to 24, and it describes the Soma Vamsa from Vishnu all the way down to Krishna and Balaram. And so starting with Vishnu, this is chapter 14, then Brahma, Atri, then from Atri came Soma and Tara, together had Bhuta and Ila, together had Pururava. Now who is Ila? Who is her father, actually? Who is Ila's father? Who is the father of Ila? It is Manu. Ila was the first son or daughter, whichever you prefer, of Manu, Sudyumna. First one, and then he had 10 more after that.
Ila
is the daughter.
And Sudyumna as a man.
Yeah, Ila Sudyumna, half man, half woman. But when she was a woman, then she married Buddha, and they had Pururava. So actually, technically speaking, both the Soma and Surya dynasties start from Manu. Both of them. Although, because...
Which
one? Our Manu, Vaivasvata Manu. Yes, we're in the present tense now, in the present Manvantara, 8th Manvantara, and we're hearing the dynasty of Vaivasvata Manu. So from the sons, he had the Surya Vamsa, which you heard from chapters 1 to 13. And his daughter Ila married Buddha, and she's part of the Soma dynasty there. Therefore, Pururava comes, and Urvashi, and then 6 sons, Ayushitayu, Sutayu, Raya, Vijaya, and Jaya. Could you flip chart for me? I made a mistake, I caught it this time, on this thing. It's not Sutayu, but it's Vijaya, who is the ancestor of Gaudi and Vishwamitra. I got confused in this second verse here, which we're coming to. There's a lot of names. Mm-hmm. And so I got the names confused, and actually it's Vijaya who is starting this dynasty. But let's go through the whole dynasty, because I won't be with you after to do it. So from Vijaya, many generations are there, then Gaudi, and from Gaudi, Vishwamitra, and Satyavati. And from Satyavati and Richika Muni, we have Jamadagni, and then Parashuram. So he's the famous one in this dynasty. Okay, you can flip it again. We'll just go through this whole dynasty today. Next is the Puru dynasty. Oh no, before that there is Ayu, yeah. And we'll hear about this tomorrow, chapters 17, 18, 19. We'll hear about this Ayu dynasty. Ayu is a son. Remember, all of these are son of Pururava that we're hearing about. So today we're going to hear about the son of Vijaya, and in his dynasty Parashuram appeared. And then tomorrow we'll hear about the son of Pururava named Ayu. In his dynasty, Nahusha, Yayati, Yadu, Tervasarjuyu, Anu, and Puru appeared. So it's the beginning of the Ayu dynasty, Puru dynasty, which are famous. Okay, so you can flip that flip chart again, and we'll see the Puru dynasty, who actually became emperors. Yadu and his brothers were cursed. Puru was the one. You'll hear about this from Bhurijan Prabhu, chapter 20, and then Dushmanta is the first famous one, and Bharata, Bharadwaj, Ajamira Riksha, Samvarana, Kuru, and after Samvarana comes Kuru dynasty. Kuru is very famous in Bhagavad Gita, O son of Kuru. Kuru dynasty, and we know that is the ruling dynasty. Okay, you can flip it again, and then we'll see who comes next in this Kuru dynasty. These are the emperors of the world. Pratipa, there is Devapi, Shantanu, and Balika.
They're brothers?
Yes, they're brothers. Devapi didn't get to be king because the Brahmanas deviated him, and he blasphemed the Vedas, so then he couldn't become king. Later on, he rectified himself. He became a mystic yogi. He took up yoga, and now he's waiting up in the Himalayas till Satyuga comes. Shantanu actually was the one who procreated for the dynasty. Shantanu had two wives, Ganga and Satyavati. From Ganga Bhishma, Brahmachari came, and from Satyavati, Chitangana and Vichitravirya. Okay, you can flip it again. This is the Kuru dynasty or Puru dynasty that we're describing right now. Whoops. I think we missed some. Is there something on the bottom there? There's more there. Vyasadeva there? She didn't put it down. Okay, so that's missing. It's on your chart, though. After Chitangana and Vichitravirya come Vyasadeva and Vichitravirya's wives. And from him came Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. And from Pandu comes Arjuna and Subhadra. From Arjuna comes Abhimanyu and Uttara. From Abhimanyu comes Parikshit and then Janmajaya. And that's the end of the... not the end, but the end that we're interested in hearing about, of the Puru dynasty. Now, the Aru dynasty, we have Madhu, Vishnu, Vasudev, Devaki, and Rohini. And on the bottom there is Krishna and Balaram. So we'll have a happy ending to the ninth canto with the appearance of Krishna and Balaram to prepare us for hearing Krishna Lila next year. So now we'll start again. The first verse described the six sons of... Okay, maybe you can put it back. She's not here. I don't know who he wants. Now to Soma. Yeah. So this is, we're going to hear, and then go to the next one. Go to the next one after this. We heard about them, now we're going to hear about Vijaya. Parashuram, today's class is about Parashuram. Both classes, 15 and 16. So verse 2. The son of Shutayu was Vasuman, son of Satyayu, Shutanjaya, son of Raya, Eka, son of Jaya, Amita, son of Vijaya, Bhima. The son of Bhima was Kanchana, son of Kanchana was Hochaka. The son of Hochaka was Janu, who drank all the water of the Ganga in one sip. Son of Janu was Puru, son of Puru was Balaka, son of Balaka, Ajaka, then Kusha. Kusha had four sons, Kushambu, Tanaya, Vasu, and Kushanab. The son of Kushambu was Gati. King Gati had a daughter named Satyavati, whom a Brahmin sage named Richika requested from the king to be his wife. King Gati, however, regarded Richika as an unfit husband for his daughter, and therefore he told the Brahmin, "My dear sir, I belong to the dynasty of Kusha. Because we are aristocratic Kshatriyas, you have to give me some dowry for my daughter. Therefore, bring at least 1,000 horses, each as brilliant as moonshine, and each having one black ear, whether right or left." So, why did he ask such a dowry from this sage? What was in his mind? Aibush?
He thought he wouldn't be able to produce it.
He thought he couldn't get it, so then he wouldn't get the daughter. But the kings, they always try to defeat the sages, but the sages usually win. Who was the example we heard about already, where the sage wanted, he was really old and wrinkled and dehydrated? He succeeded. But there was another one who the king didn't want to give. Sobari Muni. So Sobari tricked that king also. Yeah, so he said to Sobari, "Yes, you can take any of my daughters. They can choose. They're free to choose." And he's old and wrinkled. Who's going to choose him? So, but then he changed his body, which rishis can do. And he became very young and beautiful and handsome. And they all wanted to, all 50 wanted to marry him. So here this purport, son of King Gati was Vishvamitra, who was said to be a Brahmin and Kshatriya combined. Vishvamitra attained the status of a Brahmarshi, as explained later. From the marriage of Satyavati with Richika Muni would come a son of the spirit of a Kshatriya. King Gati demanded that an uncommon request be fulfilled before the Brahmin and Richika could marry his daughter. So what do you know about Vishvamitra? Does anybody know anything? Yes, Maharaj.
He was so powerful that he even partially created the universe.
He partially created the universe. I didn't know that.
And he always speaks a quarrel with Vashishtha.
Yeah, he and Vashishtha have an ongoing quarrel.
But he is known for his great degree of forgiveness.
Forgiveness.
And finally they came to settlement.
Yeah, they came to settlement. Actually, Vashishtha forgave Vishwamitra, because Vishwamitra killed all his sons. He got a Rakshasa to kill his sons. What else do you know about Vishwamitra? Yes.
He got angry
sometimes. Yes. What else do we know about Vishwamitra? Yes.
Was it the story about Kamashapada?
Kamashapada. Yeah, that's coming up. Oh no, we already had that. Yeah.
Who became a Rakshasa by the curse of Vasishtha?
Yes.
But in Mahabharata there is a story that actually it was arranged by Vishwamitra.
It was arranged by Vishwamitra.
And he arranged for this meat to be there and so Vasishtha cursed him.
Yes.
The result was that actually Kamashapada ate Vasishtha's own sons.
Yeah, he ate all the 100 sons. Yes. And then there was one grandson left, Parashara. We'll read about him today, actually. So I won't tell you now. And another thing we heard about Vishwamitra was that he became a great yogi, but he failed to control his senses, and he fell down with Menaka and became the father of Shakuntala. So that's another thing. Bhagavad Gita, even Prabhupada mentions, he compares Vishwamitra to Haridas Thakur, and saying that Haridas Thakur, he could do it. He could control himself, but Vishwamitra couldn't. It's just showing the difference between a great yogi and a devotee, again. Just like the story of Durvasa and Ambarish. So Burijan Prabhu made a nice comment on this verse. He said, it's not good to say no to a sage, because the sage may curse you. So the king said, yes, but you have to do this. And so, but the sage fulfilled the conditions. And so the kings were very much respectful of the sages. This is one of the characteristics of the Kshatriyas, that they used to listen to the Brahmins. But unfortunately, Kartavirya-Arjuna, who we'll hear about in this chapter, he did not have that quality of listening to the Brahmins, and his sons also. In fact, instead of listening, they want to kill the Brahmins. So this is very demoniac. So therefore, Parashuram had to appear. Verse 7. When King Gaudi made this demand, the great sage Richika could understand the king's mind. Therefore, he went to the demigod Varuna and brought from him the 1,000 horses that Gaudi had demanded. After delivering these horses, the sage married the king's beautiful daughter. Thereafter, Richika Muni's wife and mother-in-law, each desiring a son, requested the Muni to prepare an oblation. Thus, Richika Muni prepared one oblation for his wife with a Brahmana mantra, another for his mother-in-law with a Kshatriya mantra. Then he went out to bathe. Meanwhile, because Satyavati's mother thought the oblation prepared for her daughter, Richika's wife, must be better, she asked her daughter for that oblation. Satyavati therefore gave her own oblation to her mother and ate her mother's oblation herself. Purport, Prabhupada says, a husband naturally has some affection for his wife, therefore Satyavati's mother thought the oblation prepared for Satyavati by the sage Richika must have been better than her own oblation. In Michika's absence, the mother took the better oblation from Satyavati and ate it. So these things are going on. Verse 10, when the great sage Richika returned home after bathing and understood what had happened in his absence, he said to his wife Satyavati, you have done a great wrong. Your son will be a fierce Kshatriya, able to punish everyone, and your brother will be a learned scholar in spiritual science. Purport, a Brahmin is highly qualified when he can control his senses and mind, when he is a learned scholar in spiritual science, and when he is tolerant and forgiving. A Kshatriya, however, is highly qualified when he is fierce in giving punishment to wrongdoers. These qualities are stated in Bhagavad Gita. Because Satyavati, instead of eating her own oblation, had eaten that which was meant for her mother, she would give birth to a son imbued with a Kshatriya spirit. This was undesirable. Son of a Brahmin is generally expected to become a Brahmin, but if such a son becomes fierce like a Kshatriya, he is designated according to the description of the four Varnas in Bhagavad Gita. Chaturbanyam mayashishtam gunakarma vibhagasham. If the son of a Brahman does not become like a Brahman, he may be called a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, according to his qualifications. The basic principle for dividing society is not a person's birth, but his qualities and action. So what's the verse we learned about this? Yasyaya lakshanam bhaktam bhumsau pranakivanshkam yadinyacha pijushyata titenaiva vinirishe. So that means if you show the symptoms of being a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, even if in your different class, you should be accepted according to those symptoms. So what's going to happen is that Satyavati, although Vichika Muni's words cannot prove false, but she'll pacify him and she'll delay the action to her grandson. Verse 11. Satyavati, however, pacified Vichika Muni with peaceful words and requested that her son not be like a fierce Kshatriya. Vichika Muni replied, "Then your grandson will be of a Kshatriya spirit." Thus, Jamadagni was born as a son of Satyavati. Purport: the great sage Vichika was very angry, but somehow or other Satyavati pacified him, and at her request he changed his mind. It is indicated here the son of Jamadagni would be born as Parashuram. 12 and 13. Satyavati later became the sacred river Kaushiki to purify the entire world, and her son Jamadagni married Vimukha, daughter of Renu. By the seven of Jamadagni, many sons headed by Vasuman were born from the womb of Renuka. The youngest of them was named Ram, or Parashuram. I always wonder about this when they said she became a river. I wonder how that happens. I think also Devahuti, she became a river when she left her body. I don't remember the name of that river. But how people become rivers when they die. There's actually an example, not that he became a river, but he merged into the river, and that's Narottam. Narottam Das Thakur. So he merged into the Ganga, right? The Ganga River. At the time of death, you know, everybody knows about that, Narottam Das Thakur. How his disciples, he went to take a bath. His disciples, he said, "Massage me." So they were massaging him, and his body was turning, was melting and turning into milk. And they caught that milk, I believe, and that's the samadhi of Narottam Das Thakur. And Satyavati became a river. Devahuti became a river, which I don't remember what the name of that river is. And so this can happen also. Very interesting things happen to great people here. Verse 14, learned scholars accept this Parashuram as a celebrated incarnation of Vasudeva, who annihilated the dynasty of Kartavirya. Parashuram killed all the Kshatriyas on earth 21 times. When the royal dynasty, being excessively proud because of the material modes of passion and ignorance, became irreligious and ceased to care for the laws enacted by the Brahmins, Parashuram killed them. Although their offense was not very severe, he killed them to lessen the burden of the world. So it's not that he was simply retaliating, and it was a killing of vengeance that he killed everyone in the world, all the Kshatriyas, but there was a purpose. There were two purposes. One is that they were degraded by not following the rules of Varnashram, not listening to the Brahmins, and also they were a burden on the earth, so therefore he killed them. Purport: Prabhupada says, we actually see from modern history that monarchies have been abolished by various revolutions, but unfortunately the monarchies have been abolished to establish the supremacy of third-class and fourth-class men. So instead of the Kshatriyas ruling the government, we have the Vaishyas and Shudras, who have become the head of government. Although monarchies overpowered by the modes of passion and ignorance have been abolished in the world, the inhabitants of the world are still unhappy. For although the qualities of the former monarchs were degraded by taints of ignorance, these monarchs have been replaced by men of the mercantile and worker classes, whose qualities are even more degraded. When the government is actually guided by Brahmins, or God-conscious men, then there can be real happiness for the people. So now we have our democracy. So what are examples of the problems, the things that we find in today's democracy that we don't find in the monarchies that were led by Rajarshi. So what are some of these? Yes.
Unemployment.
Now we find unemployment. Yes. Before, everyone had his job, had his duty, and he would be employed. So now we have unemployment. Yes, Abhay.
There's no order to life.
Huh?
There's no order.
No order. There's no order to society. Okay. Ambrush.
Thieves and rogues often go unpunished.
Thieves and rogues go unpunished. Not only go unpunished, they become the ministers, especially in UP where we live. I mean, they become actually in the government. To be a minister, there are many rogues and dacoits who became in this UP government. So, yes, and what were some of the things that these kings would do that the modern the presidents don't do? What were examples? What qualities they had that we can see? Yes. They were responsible for spiritual well-being. That was one thing they did. Yes.
They would take drastic action, meaning up to killing if the person is not.
Yes, they would punish the person up to killing. Yes. So the punishments were more severe, but they worked. A thief, they would get his hands cut off, so then he couldn't steal again. No problem for stealing again. There's another one that Prabhupada often says that the kings use. Yes, go ahead.
Lord Ramdev, he was like a father to the citizens.
He was like a father to the citizens.
And he was working for their well-being, not his own well-being.
Yeah, he was only thinking of their good. And what happens when there's a war and when there's a battle? The difference between modern
king.
They kill even the civilians.
Yeah, they kill civilians. And not only that, the point Prabhupada would make was that the king would be in the front line. Mm-hmm. Not that he sends all the kids out to fight like Vietnam War, and he would stay back comfortably in his White House. But no, he would be fate, and the decision of who would win would be which king gets killed, which head of the government gets killed. That's who wins the war. So it's a fight to death for the king himself. Prabhupada said they would not stay home while the poor soldiers or mercenaries were fighting face to face. The king would be the first. He would be leading the army. Leading means you're out there in the front line. Not you're sitting with some computer or some people who are sitting with computers and telling you what's happening out in the front lines. So this is the difference. And what is the point which this chapter is making, which the quality the Kshatriyas had, that nowadays the modern kings and presidents usually don't have? Yes?
Well, being obedient to the instructions of the Brahmins.
Exactly. They had a council of Brahmins, and they wouldn't act without consulting the Brahmins. So this was the Kshatriya life. Verse 16, King Parikshit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, what was the offense that the Kshatriyas, who could not control their senses, committed before Lord Parashuram, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for which the Lord annihilated the Kshatriya dynasty again and again? Shukadeva Goswami said, the best of the Kshatriyas, Kartavir Arjuna, king of the high highest, received 1,000 arms by worshipping the Dattatreya, plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana. He also became undefeatable by enemies and received unobstructed sensory power, beauty, influence, strength, fame, and mystic power by which to achieve all the perfections of yoga, such as Anima and Lakima. Thus, having become fully opulent, he roamed all over the universe without opposition, just like the wind. So here is something interesting in this verse, that he actually worshipped the Lord. He had respect for somebody, and that was Dattatreya, but he didn't respect the devotees. So just see, you must respect the devotees even more than the Lord. We hear this over and over again. And the devotees that he doesn't respect is, the devotee is Jagadagni, who is worshipping the Lord. So verse 20, once while enjoying in the water of the river Narmada, puffed up Kartavirya Arjuna, surrounded by beautiful women and garlanded with a garland of victory, stopped the flow of the water with his arms. Because Kartavirya-arjuna made the water flow in the opposite direction, the camp of Ravana, which was set up on the bank of the Narmada near the city of Mahishmati, was inundated. This was unbearable to the ten-headed Ravana, who considered himself a great hero and could not tolerate Kartavirya-arjuna's power. So Purport Prabhupada says, Ravana was out touring to gain victory over all other countries, Digvijaya. He had camped on the bank of the Narmada River near the city of Mahishmati. So now we're comparing the power of Kartavirya-arjuna to Ravana. So we're going to see that actually he's more powerful than Ravana. He could have killed Ravana, actually, and the whole problem would be solved. But he didn't do it. Verse 22, when Ravana attempted to insult Kartavirya-arjuna in the presence of the women and thus offended him, Kartavirya-arjuna easily arrested Ravana and put him in custody in the city of Mahishmati, just as one captures a monkey, and then released him neglectfully. All right, you can go. Just like that. Even the monkeys, there's a story, I think, in Ramayana where one of the monkeys, Sugriva, caught Ravana, or one of them, put him under his arm and carried him to his place. Just like you see these monkeys carrying things. So he carried Ravana. But he didn't kill him, or because it was actually Ram who is destined to kill Ravana. You see in the Battle of Kurukshetra, it's quite interesting that everyone's fighting, and you just think, okay, if you have a chance to kill someone, you'll kill someone. But no, they don't kill because, I'm not supposed to kill him. This one vowed to kill him, so then they captured him and they let him go. Karna did that with all the Pandavas, actually, except Arjuna. He would capture them and then let them go. He could have killed Yudhisthira even. He could have killed Bhima, any of them. Yeah, Karna could have done it. But he promised also Kunti before the battle that 5 of your sons will be alive, either me or Arjuna. Because she went and begged him, you please join this side, you join our side. And Karna said, no, I've already given myself to Duryodhana, I cannot change. But he did spare the other four. And it's quite funny. I mean, it's kind of hilarious. You're fighting. You get someone, and you don't kill you. Okay, anyway, sorry, I'm not supposed to kill you. Somebody else. You let them go, and the battle goes on. And so it's quite different battle than nowadays. They kill the citizens as well, and that didn't happen. They would have the battle away from the main town, from the city. And Prabhupada said that the citizens had no need to see who would be the winner. They would just have to pay their taxes to whoever won the battle. Like that. They didn't have to see who was going to be the winner. Watch the battle like that. Now they have it on CNN or all these TVs that you can watch the battles live on CNN. They're not so exciting as these battles. These battles that were fought before. So verse 23, once while Kartavirya-arjuna was wandering unengaged in a solitary forest and hunting, he approached the residence of Jamadagni. Purport, Kartavirya-arjuna had no business going to the residence of Jamadagni, but because he was puffed up by his extraordinary power, he went there and offended Parashuram. This was the prelude to his being killed by Parashuram for his offensive act. The sage Jamadagni, who was engaged in great austerities in the forest, received the king very well, along with the king's soldiers, ministers, and carriers. He supplied all necessities to worship these guests, for he possessed a Kamadevu cow that was able to supply everything. So these cows, it's not like he just gave them a bunch of milk products, but there is an example of a Kamadevu. I can't remember, it's in Mahabharata or somewhere in there, that the king came.
With the eight vessels?
I don't know. Anyway, one king came to the forest with their thousands of soldiers, and he entertained. They had, there was a huge palace. The cow palace was erected, rooms for everybody to stay, and he brought 8 apsaras for each of the soldiers to take care of them, and they got feast and everything. The whole night they were all enjoying, and then the next morning everything vanished, and then was as before, the ashram, simple ashram living in. So these sages, they look simple, but actually they're not so simple. They have one cow like that, and It's not just that this Kamadeva would give milk, but he could be much more opulent than the emperor. Emperor's palace, this cow could provide. So that's why they wanted to take the cow. And this is the end of the purport. The king was astonished at how opulent Jamadagni was because of possessing only one cow, and therefore he became envious of the great sage. So imagine this. The sage offers you a nice welcome, gives you great entertainment, and you, instead of appreciating it, instead of saying thank you, you become envious and want to steal the cow. And so this is not very nice. Although he had so much power, this Kartavirya Arjuna, he had all this mystic power, he had everything, emperor of the world, he was not peaceful. And so therefore he had to have this too. One thing he didn't have was this cow. And so he was very proud. And because of his pride, he will be punished by Parashuram. Verse 25. Did I read for 24? Okay, 25. Kartavirya Arjuna thought that Jamadagni was more powerful and wealthy than himself because of possessing a jewel in the form of the Kamadenu. Therefore, he and his own men, the Hahayas, were not very much appreciative of Jamadagni's reception. On the contrary, they wanted to possess the Kamadenu, which was useful for execution of Agnihotra sacrifice. So Prabhupada, in the purport, 8 lines down, says, we have practical experience in America that in our various ISKCON farms we are giving proper protection to the cows and receiving more than enough milk. In other farms, the cows do not deliver as much milk as in our farms because our cows know very well we are not going to kill them. They are happy and they give ample milk. Therefore, this instruction given by Lord Krishna, Gauraksha, is extremely meaningful. The whole world must learn from Krishna how to live happily without scarcity, simply by producing food grains, anad bhavanti bhutani, and giving protection to the cows. So Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 8th chapter, verse 11, Prabhupada in the purport describes that killing of the cows in the thousands disturbs nature. There's so many results, actually, from cow slaughter. And one result is that people are unfortunate in spiritual consciousness. They don't want spiritual life. And then nature disturbs them in so many ways. Prabhupada says, through incurable diseases like cancer and through frequent wars. And no question of peace and prosperity. So I have here a little excerpt from Back to Godhead. I don't know who actually wrote this, but it's one of our devotees who lives on a farm, and it sounds like it's in America. It's the time of the first monsoon rain, and three young oxen, Bhima, Nakula, and Sahadev, gallop across the field. Their heads are smeared with soft red earth they've dug up with their horns. They see an intruder, a strange bull on their land, so they chase him out, tails and heads held high, snorting, eyes shining brightly, hooves thudding, followed by little black Nandini, who is ready for anything. Soon, they'll be working hard under the yoke of the plow in the water and deep, soft mud of the rice fields, and they will become quiet and sober. But when all the plowing is over, this is India, the farmer will bow down to their feet in respect to thank them and tell them they are free to go. And so this is how they treat the oxen, I mean, some places. Such reciprocation between man and animal and the idea of go-seva, or service to the cow, is new to us in the West, who have been brought up to believe we are the lords of all we survey and nature is ours to exploit. My urbanite, means who lives in the city, stepson, a doctor, came to visit and saw the few milking cows in their barn, and then he saw the bull, oxen, and older calves in another cowshed. He was surprised. He said, these don't give any milk? What's wrong with them? Just imagine. You live in the city, you know where milk comes from. You've never seen a cow, actually. You can't. So, you know, bulls, what's the use of having bulls? And she said, he said, they don't give any milk, what's wrong with them? And she said, they're bulls. I know, can you, living in the city, and you don't, I mean, it's like that. People, they don't know. Like, I remember when I was a kid and living in the city, and then they have a museum in Chicago, and they have cows in the museum, live cows, that you can go and see, actually. because people don't see cows. It's like a thing to see a cow. Like here, of course, they're on the road, but in the West, it's like unbelievable. Just to see a cow is like a whole experience for a person who lives in modern... I think maybe 80, 90% of the people haven't seen a cow. They eat it, but they haven't seen a real cow. So then his next reply was, well, why do you keep them then? And her reply was, are your sons not just as good as your daughters? I told him, all our cows, bulls, and calves have lifetime protection. I told him that to give milk, a cow must have a calf who must be engaged and cared for his or her whole life. Bulls are even more important than milking cows because they plow the field, carry loads on the bullock cart, and turn the oil press to extract oil from seeds. Both cows and bulls produce dung, cow dung, which is more valuable than gold, or even more valuable than the famous Kohinoor diamond, according to eminent Indian economist Veni Shankar M. Vasu, because it fertilizes the soil. So how is cow dung more valuable than this famous diamond? The farmland of India had remained fertile for hundreds of thousands of years by application of cow dung. But now, because of cow slaughter, India has a shortage of cow dung for fertilizer, and chemical fertilizer has ruined the land, killing the soil. So this economist says, if we destroy our cattle wealth, not even God can save this country. So at least somebody understands the value of the cow. And here's a cow. Because of this cow and stealing this cow, Kartavirya Arjuna is going to die. Being puffed up, 26, by material power, Kartavirya Arjuna encouraged his men to steal Jamadagni's Kamadhenu. Thus the men forcibly took away the crying Kamadhenu along with her calf to Mahishmati, Kartavirya Arjuna's capital. Purport near the end. Prabhupada says, so-called scholars and philosophers do not know the secret of success in life. Therefore, they suffer in the hands of property and nature. Nonetheless, although they are forced to suffer, they think they are advancing in civilization. The Krishna conscious movement is therefore meant to revive a mode of civilization in which everyone will be happy. This is the motive of our Krishna conscious movement. Yogye Sukhena Bhavantu. So here we are. The purpose of our movement, Prabhupada's mood and mission, is what? Very simple. To make people happy. That's the whole purpose of our movement. So this is shown here with just having this one cow. And of course, every cow is also very valuable and can also give us a means of livelihood and a way to live, a mode of living, quite different mode of civilization. And so, Kartavirya Arjuna was not satisfied even though he had everything. He was emperor, he had mystic powers, but he didn't have this cow. So now, they took the cow. Thereafter, Kartavirya Arjuna, having left with the Kamadhenu, Parashuram returned to the ashram. When Parashuram, youngest son Jamadagni, heard about Kartavirya Arjuna's nefarious deed, he became as angry as a trampled snake. Taking up his fierce chopper, his shield, his bow, and a quiver of arrows, Lord Parashuram, exceedingly angry, chased Kartavirya Arjuna just as a lion chases an elephant. As King Kartavirya Arjuna entered his capital, Mahishmatipuri, he saw Lord Parashuram, best of the Bhrigu dynasty, coming after him, holding a chopper, shield, bow, and arrows. Lord Parashuram was covered with a black deerskin, and his matted locks of hair appeared like sunshine. Upon seeing Parashuram, Kartavirya Arjuna immediately feared him and sent many elephants, chariots, horses, and infantry soldiers, equipped with clubs, swords, arrows, mishkis, shatagni, shaktis, and many similar weapons to fight against him. Kartavirya Arjuna sent 17 full akshahinis of soldiers to check Parashuram. But Lord Parashuram alone killed all of them. So the purport has a huge quote, and the quote explains, well, first sentence one. The word akshahini refers to a military phalanx consisting of 21,870 chariots and elephants, means each, 109,350 infantry soldiers and 65,610 horses. So multiply that by 17, and that's how many soldiers, horses, elephants, chariots, infantry came to fight against Parashuram. So imagine the scene. One Parashuram and millions of soldiers. I don't know how much it comes to. It must be at least a million, more than a million, a couple of million of soldiers. 2-3 million.
Well, 18
at Kurukshetra.
It doesn't equate 640 million.
Huh?
640 million. That's something which is mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling, yeah.
I never understood, because that's what Kurukshetra says, 18 actually means.
Actually, 18
actually means. That's close to 640 million.
Yeah. Perhaps they didn't count all of them. 18 main ones. Because even Krishna's army was huge. How big was Krishna's army when Krishna gave his army to Duryodhana?
Yeah, so
that was
some
huge. Anyway, whatever. A lot of people were killed. Actually, the whole world was there at the Battle of Kurukshetra. It was the whole world. It was a world war. World War One or World War Two? I don't know. If Ramayana was World War, no, actually it's World War One. 5,000 years ago, it was World War One. Means all the king, everybody in the whole world was fighting, and they all got killed except five on the Pandava side, and then on the other side there were three: Ashwatthama, Kripa, and Pritivarma. And Ashwatthama is still living. I think Kripa, the others may also be still living. If we remember the list of the seven sages, I think some of them are also in the seven sages group for the next Manvantara. So here we go. Lord Parashuram, being expert in killing the military strength of the enemy, worked with the speed of the mind and the wind, slicing his enemies with his chopper, Parashu. Wherever he went, the enemies fell, their legs, arms, and shoulders being severed, their chariot drivers killed, and their carriers, the elephants and horses, all annihilated. So everyone was finished. The soldiers and the animals. Prabhupada explains in the purport. In the beginning, when the army of the enemy was full of fighting soldiers, elephants, and horses, Lord Parashuram proceeded into their midst at the speed of the mind to kill them. So imagine, the speed of the mind means that you just think of it and they're dead. You think and they're dead. Think. So it's pretty fast. And that's how his body was moving at that speed to kill all these people. When somewhat tired, he slowed down to the speed of the wind and continued to kill the enemies vigorously. Speed of the mind is greater than speed of the wind. And so mind is, we can't even imagine how fast he was killing all those soldiers. It must have happened very quickly. Actually,
Arjuna also couldn't see the arms.
Yes, Arjuna. You couldn't see his arm, and also there was one point when to catch Jayadratha, who had killed his son the previous day. He had to go through the whole army. They put Jayadratha in the back of the army because actually he wanted to go home. He said, "I'm not staying. Arjuna is going to get me for sure." And so then Duryodhana said, don't worry, we'll put the whole army in front of you and then all the big generals will be right with you. And so Arjuna had to go through the whole army, and he was going so fast, of course Krishna was driving the chariot, that he would shoot the arrow and he'd be ahead of the arrow.
Wow.
So he'd shoot, but the arrow in front of the arrow. Here you go. Huh? To catch Jayadratha, who killed his son. He killed Jayadratha. Because of Jayadratha, his son was killed. His son Abhimanyu was killed. Jayadratha stopped all the other four Pandavas from reaching Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu alone went into the enemy, so he knew how to go in. He didn't know how to come out. And he kept the space open for the others to follow, but Jayadratha blocked the space. He got a special benediction from Lord Shiva because Jayadratha had kidnapped Draupadi for a short time. And then they disgraced him. Then he worshipped Lord Shiva, and he asked Lord Shiva if he could kill all the Pandavas. And Lord Shiva said, "Not possible. But you can stop four of them." And Arjuna, "It's not possible." He said, "But four you can stop." So then he took this benediction at this time and he stopped Bhima, Yudhisthira, Nakula and Sahadev from following Abhimanyu into the army. And then Abhimanyu was killed by 6 or 7 big generals, Bhishma, all of them. They had to combine to kill. No, Bhishma was down, but Drona, whoever was there, left. The big generals were combined to kill him. They couldn't. He was almost like Arjuna. So that time Arjuna was going also. Because Krishna was driving, so Krishna can go at any speed. Krishna was driving his chariot. So the chariot was going faster than the arrows. Little known facts. So verse 32. By manipulating his axe and arrows, Lord Parashuram cut to pieces the shields, flags, bows and bodies of Kartavir Arjuna's soldiers who fell on the battlefield, muddying the ground with their blood. Seeing these reverses, Kartavir Arjuna, infuriated, rushed to the battlefield. Then Kartavir Arjuna, with his 1,000 arms, simultaneously fixed arrows and 500 bows to kill Lord Parashuram. But Lord Parashuram, best of fighters, released enough arrows with only one bow to cut them to pieces immediately. All the arrows and bows in the hands of Kartavir Arjuna. When his arrows were cut to pieces, Kartavir Arjuna rooted many trees and hills with his own hands and again rushed strongly toward Lord Parashuram to kill him. But Parashuram then used his axe with great force to cut off Kartavir Arjuna's arms, just as one might lop off the hoods of a serpent. Thereafter, Parashuram cut off like a mountain peak the head of Kartavir Arjuna, who had already lost his arms. When Kartavir Arjuna's 10,000 sons saw their father killed, they all fled in fear. Then Parashuram, having killed the enemy, released the Kamatenu, which had undergone great suffering, and brought it back to it with its calf to his residence, where he gave it to his father, Jamdagni. Parashuram described to his father and brothers his activities in killing Kartavir Arjuna. Upon hearing of these deeds, Jamadagni spoke to his son as follows. O great hero, my dear son Parashuram, you have unnecessarily killed the king, who is supposed to be the embodiment of all the demigods, thus you have committed a sin. My dear son, we are all Brahmins and have become worshipable for the people in general because of our quality of forgiveness. It is because of this quality that Lord Brahma, supreme spiritual master of this universe, has achieved his post. Verse 40. The duty of a Brahmin is to culture the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari is pleased with those who are forgiving. So don't look at the purport, and we'll have a quiz, short quiz. How do the Brahmanas become beautiful?
Forgiveness.
How do the Kshatriyas become beautiful? Huh? Heroism, yes. Heroism means they don't run away from a fight. Heroic, never retreat. And the Vaishyas? Protect cows and? Charity. Enrich cultural activities, Prabhupada says here. Charity. And the Shudras are beautiful? By serving, when they're faithful to their master. Faithful. He'll be the purport. Different personalities become beautiful by possessing different qualities. Chanaka Pandit says, the cuckoo bird, although very black, is beautiful because of its sweet voice. Similarly, a woman becomes beautiful by her chastity and faithfulness to her husband. An ugly person becomes beautiful when he becomes a learned scholar. In the same way, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras become beautiful by their qualities. Brahmins are beautiful when they are forgiving. Kshatriyas, when they are heroic and never retreat from fighting. Vaishyas, when they enrich cultural activities and protect cows, and Shudras, when they are faithful in discharging duties, pleasing to their masters. Thus everyone becomes beautiful by his special qualities. And the special quality of the Brahman, as described here, is forgiveness. So what is an example? What are some examples of forgiveness? It doesn't have to be by Brahmins, but it can be by anybody in our literature. Parashara. Yes. Parashara is one. His example was given by Srila Prabhupada in 389, purport, that his father, of course, Kalvashapad ate his father, who was one of the sons of Vishishta, and he was brought up by Vishishta just like a son. So he thought Vishishta was his father. But then one day, And somebody came and told him, you know, that's not your father, it's your grandfather. He said, well, where's my father? And then he said, well, he was eaten by Rakshasa. So therefore he did a sacrifice to rid the world of all Rakshasas. But he was stopped. He was requested by, oh, actually, was it Parashara? Yes, Vasishta came and requested him. His grandfather came and said, please stop. And so he stopped, and Pulastya, the father of Rakshasas, was very pleased, and he gave him a benediction that you will be a great speaker on the Puranas. So the first thing he spoke was Bhagavatam, Parashara. He spoke to who? Do we remember?
Third canto.
He spoke to the
guru of Maitreya.
Maitreya. He spoke to Maitreya. He spoke to Maitreya and to Brihaspati, I believe. Yeah. There were two.
Actually, that was a line of...
That's a line of Kumara Sampradaya.
Yeah, that's from Shankarshan.
Yes, yes. This is Kumara Sampradaya, so Parashara is in that line. And Vyasadeva is in our line, in the Madhva line. So, Parashara. But he also was a friend of Vyasadeva, I think. Was he a friend? No, Maitreya was a friend of Vyasadeva. Because Parashara is the father, and he's the guru of Maitreya and father of Vyasadeva. So then, therefore, Maitreya and Vyasadeva were friends. They were friends. What's another example, Abhay? Forgiveness? Ambrish, yes. Ambrish. Who else?
I was thinking of Dhruva.
Dhruva
was told by...
He was killing all the Yakshas. He was killing the Yakshas.
For Uttama's
death. Mm-hmm.
So thankfully he forgave.
Who else forgave? Very famous, one of the heroes of Srimad Bhagavatam. A big hero. Parikshit. Parikshit forgave the Brahmana boy who cursed Shingi. Janmejaya. Yeah, he also performed a snake sacrifice. He wanted to kill all the snakes in the universe. They can do that. If somebody eats your father or kills your father, then immediately sacrifice to kill all the snakes. Sacrifice to kill all the Rakshasas. Go kill all the Yakshas. They used to be able to do that. Now, of course, nobody can do that. Yes, I Krish.
So,
Orva.
Kshatriyas.
Kshatriyas were disturbing the Brahmins.
So he survived being beaten in a thigh.
He survived.
That's why he's called Orva
from the thigh.
And he started a huge sacrifice to kill the Kshatriyas, but then his relatives, Brahmins, convinced him that he
was.
And that's how Vadavanala, the he did create a terrible fire. And he said, so what do you do with this fire? He told him, okay, give it to the ocean.
Throw it in the ocean.
So that's why you have those ocean volcanoes.
Volcanoes, okay, so that's the fire of Orva.
So he was,
the depths of the ocean, it's hot.
So he forgave.
He forgave too. So then there's a nice thing in the Purport 4.6.48 about Parikshit. And Prabhupada says, a Vaishnava is personally tolerant for the benefit of others. When he does not show his prowess, this does not mean he is lacking in strength. Rather, indicates he's tolerant for the welfare of the entire human society. So Parikshit tolerated so that Bhagavatam could be spoken. So it's not that the Vaishnavas have no power. Sometimes people think, oh, if you're just tolerant and you just forgive, people walk all over you, that's because you have no power. But actually, he has power. But he tolerates not for the benefit, not for himself, but for the benefit of others. The Haridas Thakur also, he tolerated. Yes?
What is the difference between justice properly applied and, forgiveness?
What is the difference between justice properly applied and forgiveness? Well, the point is that for yourself, you tolerate. And you don't worry about justice. Just as in the case of Parikshit Maharaj. And justice properly applied means that there is a person who's supposed to do the justice. A kshatriya basically is responsible for justice in the society. So there are cases where brahmanas, they're powerful enough to kill demons. Like Vishwamitra, he was powerful enough, but he came to Ram to request, he came to Dasharatha to request Ram and Lakshman to come and kill, because it was their duty. It was not the duty of the brahman. So it's also a question of duty and occupational duty. Justice applied means that the kshatriyas, that is, they're in charge of justice. So if you're a brahmin or a vaishya or a shudra, then you don't take the justice in your own hands, but you tolerate. At least the brahmins tolerate. The others may not tolerate, but the brahmins tolerate.
Say, for instance, someone has committed a sin, or in a and hasn't been punished properly.
Don't worry.
Do we have to still forgive this person, although this person is still going around not being punished?
His punishment is his mind, his own mind. Because he has to live with his mind, and there will be, I mean, now he will suffer the subtle punishment, and later he will suffer the gross. And with interest it is. It's always, okay, whatever you do in this life, you get it back in next life with interest. So, you don't have to worry. The law of the land, it may not be there, but there are how many witnesses? 11 witnesses?
10, 13?
13 witnesses.
So in any case,
you cannot escape justice.
The Brahman forgives everybody in all
services. Yeah, the Brahman forgives. The Brahman forgives. Unless he's on the CPO or CP, whatever that is, Child Protection Committee, you know, whatever. If you're in the position that you're a judge or justice and you're giving justice, then that's something else. But basically it refers to your own self especially. Like in India now, practically there's no justice and people take it into their hands, pretty much. I mean, there's courts, there's things like that, but I think the majority of cases, people take it into their own hands, from what I've seen. Somebody hits somebody on the road, car hits somebody, then the car, 100% of the cases, goes away. Doesn't do anything. Just flees, because the people will kill the driver if they catch him. That happened, I mean, yeah. Or if not kill, at least beat him up. That happened when our devotee, Devi Shakti, she got hit by a car in front of the road. Car sped away. Abhi Harilal and the flower men caught him. It didn't kill him, yeah.
They killed him?
No. They beat him up, though.
Just about.
Yeah, you're lucky. And took all his money.
Good.
And Devi Shakti forgave him. They brought him to Devi Shakti. She said, I forgive you. Yeah, but she was suffering for some months. And they took his money and gave it to the deities. Gave it to the deities. They should give it anyway, whatever. But this happens, you know, all the time. If, on the road, if you're in a car and that car kills somebody, then you're finished. Even if you're a passenger.
It happened to Prabhupada. It didn't stop. When the devotee driving the Mercedes, the yellow Mercedes,
yeah,
hit the guy, Prabhupada said, don't stop.
Yeah.
Because you know.
Yeah, in India, it's the rule is life for life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was on traveling Sankirtan, and twice. One time we hit a man, and one driver. It was like he was in the race or something. He just took off. Another time we hit a buffalo, and the driver ran away, and we had no driver. But the buffalo was okay. The car was finished. Buffaloes are tough. Oh, the windshield was gone on the car, so we had to drive ourselves. The driver just took off, split.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, windshield was. Anyway, yeah, so we know in India this is the rule of the road. There are so many rules of the road in India, it's quite different. I don't want to get into it, but there's many categories of, it's whoever is first, he gets the right of the road. And guess what? Who's first on the list is the cow. First on the list, if there's a cow on the road, the cow gets the road. Second is the biggest truck. And last is somebody walking on the road. You have your life in your hands. And it goes all the way down to bicycle and all that. But if you're driving, yeah, then you see how it is. So anyway, justice. Now we're in forgiveness here. Verse 41. My dear son, killing a king who is an emperor is more severely sinful than killing a Brahmin. But now, if you become Krishna conscious and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. Purport. One who fully surrenders the supreme personality of God is free from all sins. Aham tam sarvapapi bhyo moshe shami. From the very day or moment he fully surrenders to Sri Krishna, even the most sinful person is free. Nonetheless, as an example, Jamadagni advised his son, Parashuram, to worship the holy places. Because an ordinary person cannot immediately surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is advised to go from one holy place to another to find saintly persons and thus gradually be released from sinful reactions. So, Brijan Prabhu gives a very nice comment here. He says, to err is human. You understand that? Mm-hmm. To make a mistake, that's human. And to forgive is divine. I thought that was a really nice... Brijan. Yeah, in his lecture. To err is human and to forgive is divine. And so if you don't forgive and you're angry and you want to get even, then this is very destructive for your own self. But somebody who commits offenses or sins and gets away, nobody gets away with it. Don't worry. His very mind will be the worst punishment for him. So I have a question here that was asked of Brijan at the end of his class. And the question is that it seems that Parshuram was getting even with Kartavirya Arjuna. He stole the cow, and so he got even with him and he killed him. So is that a fact, that he was getting even? Maravinta.
Well, that was his purpose for adventing himself.
The purpose for coming, adventing, was to get even?
No, to get rid of the kshatriyas.
To get rid of the kshatriyas. Okay, Adipurush?
Yeah. It is mentioned that he had that the kshatriyas were covered by ignorance and passion, and he used his small offense to exterminate them.
Yeah, the offense was an excuse, basically, for his mission to take place. La Bangalata, you had something? Yeah. It was just an excuse that this thing happened. Of course, the next thing is going to really make him angry. In the next chapter, we'll hear. When they kill his father. That's enough. Stealing a cow is not so bad. But killing his father is... This is a big offense. So we'll stop here. Any questions or comments on this chapter 15?
I'd like to hear what the actuality is.
What?
How to reconcile 18 actualities in the...
Oh, you want to hear about the Mahabharata?
Yeah, because 640 million doesn't amount to...
640 million.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't amount to 11
actually.
If you have those 18 actually
results,
it
comes
to about 6 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's approximate.
In the DVD, it's been long accepted that it's a misprint.
You were a translator, right?
Yeah. Prabhupada himself, he was surprised when he said in the Kurukshetra war, 6 million people died. Somebody said 600 million.
He
said, no, 6 million.
Okay. So it's 6 million.
So that's a misprint.
Misprint.
In the original, it says 64 crore. So probably Prabhupada wrote 64 lakhs. And maybe the guy at the publishing house, they thought, right, left. That doesn't sound good.
64 crore.
64 crores is 640 million, yeah.
So Prabhupada himself was surprised. I can send the quote. He said 6 million. But then it says 600.
You
know, 6 million.
Oh, okay.
That's not so much.
That is because World War II was 50 million.
50.
In Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they killed the civilians, that's why. These are only the soldiers and kings that got killed.
But the Yadu battle was worse than the Korean fight. In the IRS and
so how do you... Okay. Any other questions or comments on these verses? Adi Purush.
This Orva who forgave.
Orva who forgave.
He was actually the father of Ruchika.
Oh, no.
The father of Ruchika, who was the father of Jamadagni, was the
father of Parashuram. Amazing. Father of Ruchika was Orva who forgave.
And he was, the reason for that extermination was that.
So the Kshatriyas, there's a history of the Kshatriyas being bad.
Kritavirya, the father of Kartavirya.
Kritavirya, father of Kartavirya.
He performed many sacrifices and gave lots of wealth to the Brahmins.
Mm-hmm.
And so his.
So Kritavirya gave lots of wealth to the Brahmins.
So his children, they didn't have much wealth, so they came back to the Brahmins.
So the children of Kritavirya didn't have much money, they went back to the Brahmins.
And but the Brahmins, some they gave it away to some sages, some hid it in the ground. So they
got rid of the wealth, the Brahmins.
Yeah, they hid it. And then some Kshatriya started digging near the house and he found the treasure trove.
Oh.
So they became angry and they started killing all the Brahmins. Up to the
so the father of Kartavirya Arjuna started killing all the Brahmins.
Not the father, it must be either Kartavirya or his
brother. Oh, Kartavirya. Oh, his? He did. I was wondering why, how they insulted. So they were killing the Brahmins. What to speak of not listening to them.
It's from Mahabharata.
I don't remember the story.
They exterminated all the Brahmins up to the embryos in the wounds.
Up to the embryos. Even the embryos they were killing.
Yeah,
my God.
Only Oro survived somehow.
Because he wasn't in the womb, he was in the thigh.
He was hidden. His mother hid him somehow.
Oh, she did that.
Yeah. And so when he started exterminating the Kshatriyas, then all the Brahmins came back from the Pitruloka.
Mm.
And that's actually, this story is being told by Vasishtha to Parashara.
So Vasishtha is telling a story to Parashara
to convince him that
he shouldn't kill all the Rakshasas.
So all the Pitris came to Orva and they told him, hey, Orva, don't do this. We wanted to die.
Yeah, I heard that too.
We
had such a long duration of life and we're not dying. And
we got bored.
We got bored.
Because death had no... We were of spotless conduct and death has no power.
So death could not come because we were of spotless conduct.
So we devised, we thought how to create such a... The suicide is not good.
So the Brahmins were thinking how to die.
So
they created some
quarrel
with the Kshatriyas.
To die and go to Pitriloka.
Go to Pitriloka and enjoy. These things happen. Better to be a devotee of Krishna. Bye-bye. Oh, he got a benediction from Dattatreya.
So that means he must have been a devotee at some time.
Well, Dattatreya taught him personalism. He didn't teach Vaishnavism.
Yeah.
He's an impersonalist. So he taught them, but he didn't teach them everything. In fact, very few people got this confidential knowledge of Vaishnavism in the past. It's amazing how we're getting it. But they didn't get Vaishnavism. They were worshipping Dattatreya for the, you know, and he taught them Brahman realization, basically. If you see in 11th canto, we'll find out his teachings, the 24 gurus. That's the teaching of Dattatreya. And he was the one who was laying in the road like a python, whom Prahlad met. Oh, you missed that part, yeah. There's a part in the 7th canto, I think, where Prahlad meets a sage who's laying in the road like a python, and that was Dattatreya. And he preached him basically in personalism. Oh, I forgot, there's a commentary here, which he gave me. It's so small I forgot it. On verse 39, let's see what verse 39 says. Verse 39 says, we are Brahmins, have become worshipable for people in general because of our quality of forgiveness. It is because of this quality that Lord Brahma, the supreme spiritual master of this universe, has achieved his post. So, Viraragava says, killing an offender, an aggressor, is not sinful, Parashuram might say. This verse answers, we are Brahmins. A Brahmin should not kill his killer. Okay. So that was a comment on verse 39. Yeah, it's very, very complicated what's actually happening. We see somebody's killing somebody and somebody's killing somebody. But we didn't know that the Brahmins wanted to be killed and go to Pitriloka. And, you know, so many things are happening. But all of them are lessons for us. Yeah, Orva was protected, and another one was protected, Balaka or something, Balika was protected from Parshuram. In one dynasty we heard about him. I think it must be the Surya dynasty. And he was called Mulaka. Uh-huh.
What would be the point for all these Balas to want to go to Pitriloka? Because they know anyway they're coming down at some point again. Are they hoping to obtain liberation?
No, they want to enjoy.
They just want to enjoy.
Yeah. Karmakandiya Brahmins or whatever. There's different kind of Brahmins. There's the ones like Shukacharya, and then there's Jnana, and then there's Vaishnavas.
So Pitriloka is a planet of enjoyment.
Yeah. And that's where if you offer shot ceremony, then your ancestors go there. That's where they go. It's a place of enjoyment. Right? It's a subtle place.
It's
Yamaloka. Yes. I don't know if it's exactly. Is it exactly Yamaloka? Or I don't
nearby.
Think. It's near. Nearby. Yeah. It's not hellish planets. It's nearby.
Nearby.
Yeah. Petries. Yeah. Neighbors. Neighbors in the universe.
Aryama.
Huh?
Aryama.
Yeah. Their neighbors, Aryama, and there's Yamaraj nearby. They're not the same. Yeah.
So Aryama takes the post of Yamaraj.
Oh yeah, Aryama took over the post, so I guess it was easy for him. They're both in the same neighborhood. They don't have to travel far to work. Aryama took over. Yeah, there's two paths. There's the, what do you call it, going down? Dakshina? Yeah, Pitrayana and Devayana. So the Pitrayana, you go south in the universe. You go down, Devayana, you go up north in heavenly planets. But that's also heavenly in the south. You know, they think the goal, you know, these Brahmins think the goal of life is to enjoy, basically. I mean, some Brahmins. So they go to Pitriloka. Yes. You should go and enlighten them in Pitriloka. Kisha Sirobini. Nimi. No. The Nimi in the 11th canto is one of the 9 yogendras. Oh, is there another?
Is it the same?
The same.
Which Nimi? I lost it. You know what? Which
Nimi? In the 13th chapter.
No, I thought Nimi was one of the 9 Yogendras.
No,
there's another Nimi. He spoke to them. No. Or they spoke to him.
The 9 Yogendras spoke to Nimi.
Nimi.
Interesting. So it's the same.
Yeah, it's probably the same Nimi. I mean, Nimi is famous, so. And who knows?
It's
the same.
Well, that's what I thought. Didn't it say so?
Bhrijan? It's the same Nimi. Anyway, yeah, when you do a sacrifice, it's not just, you just do the sacrifice. You have Brahmins coming in the intermission and they talk, they speak Mahabharata, they speak Ramayana. And so these Yogendras came and they spoke in the intermission of his. He was doing the sacrifice before he left his body. So like it's like that. The sacrifices were very interesting. You have all these things going on, but then at the same time the sages are coming, and like Rajasuya sacrificed, the whole 7th canto happened. That Narada spoke to Yudhisthira during Rajasuya sacrifice. And Janamejaya during his snake sacrifice, he heard Mahabharata, I believe. King Janamejaya heard the Mahabharata during his snake sacrifice. So these things are going on. It's quite interesting to be at a sacrifice. You can hear the Mahabharata, you can hear the histories. Any other questions or comments? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.